All right, welcome everybody back into the CC podcast. It is the morning of Wednesday, September 6th. This is Mike Rutherford in Louisville, Kentucky. Danny Snard, I believe at Michael Jordan's high school somewhere. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I'm in Wilmington, North Carolina for work, home of the GOAT. I didn't even really think about it, but I was driving and I noticed I was on Michael Jordan's freeway. So I was like, oh, and I just was curious like where he went to high school, and I was like 1 minute away. So like, and then I proceeded to pull in the parking lot, and a 38-year-old man was taking pictures in a high school in his car. So that wasn't weird, but no, I just wanted to see it. Pretty cool. I think it's called like Laney High School, so actually right down the street here. But yeah, I was born in Chicago, so there's some Jordan nostalgia with me a little bit.
Stop trying to justify it. It's creepy. It's okay. But we are here. We're ready to talk football. This we've done the podcast now since 2020. This is the first time where we've had the opportunity after week one of U of L football to do like a real celebratory, I feel good about things type podcast. You know, we won our first game in 2020, the COVID year. It was weird. We played Western Kentucky. It was just like, it didn't feel normal at all. And then we've had disastrous season openers the last 2 years, got blasted by Ole Miss a couple of years ago, had the debacle at Syracuse last season. This is going to feel good. We're going to soak this one up. I know you may be saying it's just Georgia Tech, there were issues. I get it. It was not a work of art. Georgia Tech is not a world beater. For right now, none of that matters. And I think you've seen that play out when you've seen how Louisville fans have reacted to this win over the last 4 or 5 days. We just needed something good to happen. And something good happened. At halftime, and I want to get all of Dan's thoughts on where he was mentally at halftime, what he was doing watching the game on his classic Labor Day, Lake Weekend. I don't know if he's recovered yet, but we'll get there. At halftime on Friday night, it's 28-13, and I'm walking around the house just kind of pacing, and I'm literally having this thought in my head. When I do the radio show on Tuesday, when I do the podcast the next time, like I feel like I'm not even going to focus on how this loss happened, how where we go from here in the Jeff Brohm era. I feel like my focus is going to be the fact that nothing good is ever going to happen again. The fact that this is just the way that things are going to be. We're going to get hyped up for football. We're going to get let down by football. Basketball is never going to be in a place where, you know, we're looking forward to seasons because we're national title contenders again. Like, this is just the new way of the world. In this post-Tom Jurich era, we just cannot have nice things. And it feels so good to avoid that. We'll get into all the ins and the outs of the games because there is a lot of celebrating to happen, but there's also some nitpicking to happen. But Dan, Lake Weekend, how is your viewing experience? I know you kind of have that weird thing going on there where you've got a lot of people. Were you able to like watch the game in peace and in a clear headspace?
I was able to watch the game. You know, when we have like eight people around, there's a lot of talking, so it's not like you're home watching it by yourself where, you know, you can pretty much like dissect everything because you're trying to hold conversations as well and be social. But with that being said, I mean, just kind of to add to what you're saying, out of any sport, I guess, like that I can think of, it's better in college football to learn your lessons through a win than versus a loss. Because, I mean, there's just so many rare chances to get wins in college football. You can't let them go to waste. And there's a ton of teaching points. There's a lot to, you know, that we can go back and say, man, we got to improve there. We got to improve there. But the main thing is, like you said, we won. At halftime, I mean, geez, not only was I in a dark place for Louisville, I mean, the bottom line is going there. The Reds had just lost game one of the doubleheader, and they're down one run going into the ninth. I was like, I'm going to go 0-3 here.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be brutal. I was in a very, very dark place. But, man, what a second half. I mean, the vibes picked up immediately, I think, like in the third quarter there. So, yeah, I mean, we'll dissect the game. But I'm the same way with you. It's so nice just to get off on a good foot and talk about a win and also talk about, you know, what was good and, you know, what we can work on without absolutely, you know, having to bury somebody because we lost.
Did Noelve Marte save Louisville football? Everything changed when he singled up the middle to end the game.
Yeah, well, Nick Martini may have, but we'll give it to Noelve too.
This is Nick Martini's team now. It's the Martini Reds. That's who we are. People are like, Reds talks for the summer. Leave it alone. Sorry, we're in first place in the wild card now. For the last wild card. We're feeling good. Am I weird for saying... I'm not saying that I would choose what happened on Friday night over a 45-3 win or something like that where we just thoroughly dominated. But I kind of liked the way that the game played out. It almost made it sweeter, the way that it happened, because we are this fan base that has been, at least in recent years, just so tortured. Just you know, every time it feels like we can get excited about something, it gets ripped away from us. And under Scott Satterfield, you know, when we won games, we typically, it was kind of like boat race style. We got out early, we held on to that lead. Every now and then you had a back and forth type lead, but we never had those big halftime adjustment type come from behind victories. And that's not, it's not really just a Scott Satterfield deal. When you think about Bobby Petrino, either 1.0 or 2.0, like halftime adjustments was not necessarily his big thing. Our worst losses under Petrino, a lot of them came, you know, I'm thinking 04 Miami, 06 Rutgers, 2014 Florida State. A lot of them came when we had a great game plan, got out to a nice little early lead, we're up like 24-7 at halftime, and then they changed in the second half and we didn't. So to have a game like this where it feels like the all is lost moment, it feels like here we go again, and then to have the exact opposite happen in the second half, it almost has made the celebration sweeter for me. And again, I know it's Georgia Tech. I know you'd like to see domination. But keep in mind, Kelly Dickey had the stat. UofL had been 3-135 all time in games where they trailed by more than 14 points at halftime. 3-135. This is only the fourth time in the history of Louisville football that we've been down by more than two touchdowns at the break and come back and won. And it had not happened since Lamar Jackson got inserted in that 2015 UK game where we trailed 24-7 at halftime and came back to win 38-24. I think like what this says to me is, one, Jeff Brohm knows what he's doing. I like the fact that after the game, he wasn't just saying, you know, we did some things at halftime. He really elaborated on what those changes were, what they did defensively in the second quarter that just was not working. He said, we thought we could play a certain type of way. We couldn't. You can't be too stubborn in football. We changed it, and we saw it. The fruits of our labor paid off in the second half. And two, I think it went to show you can be a coach who yells and screams a lot. I think we all wanted to see that after Scott Satterfield. It means nothing if the players don't trust in what the actual message is.
Right.
So, yeah, Brohm ripped the paint off the walls at halftime. I think that much was apparent in the post-game interviews. But if you're just a coach who yells and screams without really saying anything, the players aren't going to react to it. He yelled and screamed at halftime, but his message got across. You saw how hard that team played in the second half, and then you saw the schematic adjustments pay off. It made me feel really, really good about the Jeff Brohm era moving forward, because I think we now know that we have a guy who, one, knows what he's doing, and who, two, the players are going to react to and play for. You saw both of those things play out in the second half on Friday night.
100%. And you're talking about, like, the contrast and kind of coaching and, you know, how Scott gets the message across versus Jeff Brohm. I mean, when you're a new coach, and I'm not saying that Brohm, I'm sure there was points in the off season where there was, you know, whether a workout or practice that, you know, the riot act might have been read or they weren't going hard or things like that. But to have adversity so early in the season and then, you know, just know that there may have been a kind of come to Jesus moment in that locker room at halftime, and to see how those players responded. I mean, for a new coach, you know, sometimes that might not happen until midway through the season, and it might come in, you know, a blowout loss. So
yeah.
For it to happen and for the players to respond like they did, it's awesome to see. And you just know without being in that locker room, you just know it's the exact opposite of what would have happened with that coaching staff last year, which is why the victory, you know, tastes so sweet right now. I guarantee after the game, you know, there was things that Coach Brohm probably pointed out that, hey, we need to address this. We need to address this. But, you know, I'm sure he doesn't like to do that and want to do that at halftime. But, hey, if you do it and you get the team to turn around and get a win out of it, then obviously – whatever he said needed to be said, and I'm glad the players got the message.
Yeah, when he talks about the scheme changes, the exact quote was, "We got in a rut there playing too much man coverage in the second quarter. We had some guys running all over the place and not knowing where to be. I thought we played the same front too much. We were on our heels. The linebackers weren't attacking downhill. Fortunately, we've worked on a lot of things throughout fall camp and summer and the spring, and we made adjustments and we used different calls, changed the front, stemmed the front, played more zone, and we did a much better job. I just think you can come into a game thinking you can do something, and if it doesn't work, you've got to be able to adjust. I applaud our defensive coaches for making those adjustments." I mean, it's refreshing to hear that you've got a coach, because it doesn't matter how much of a head start you think you have. If you're too stubborn to evolve, whether we're talking about a game or a season or, you know, multiple seasons, people are going to catch up. I think we're seeing that with Clemson football a little bit. Dabo doesn't think he needs to adjust to the new way of the world. Guess what? You've lost three of your last four games. You're not looking like a national title contender. The fact that Brohm is not so stubborn that he's not going to stick to a game plan just because he thought he had something going into it that was going to work, I think it's refreshing, and I think it's a good sign for the future. I did really like when they had the player availability during the post game. It was Jack Plummer and it was Desmond Tell, who played very well on the defensive line. And, you know, Brohm used the phrase, he said, "I didn't lift a whole lot of spirits at halftime," which is a great way of saying, like, I fucking ripped these kids a new asshole.
Yeah.
But he didn't go into detail about what he actually said. And so they asked the question, you know, to both players, you know, what was the halftime conversation like? What exactly was said? And Des Tell, he starts giving an honest answer. Like, he starts, like, I think he's about to say exactly what was said, and Jack Plummer is kind of like, uh-uh. Like starts, like, shaking his head and says something under his breath where he's like, you don't say, we're not saying exactly what Coach Brohm said to us. And so Des Tell kind of stops in his tracks, and he goes, "At halftime, Jeff Brohm got us hyped. I ain't going to lie. It was crazy. It felt like a dream. I felt like we were going to win regardless." That was all he was going to be willing to say. And Jack Plummer's like, yeah, he kind of got into us a little bit. He had some choice words for us. It got us the fire here. He's here to win games. We're here to win games. But I love that nobody was going to be like, well, he called us, you know, yeah, motherfucking bitches. He called us this. Like, but Brohm said the only thing that he was willing to say was that he did say, anybody who doesn't play hard in the second half, you're not playing for the rest of the year. And then in his post-game celebratory victory, he's like, you guys play harder than they did in the second half, which I think was very apparent. So I love everything that happened at halftime, even though we never will probably know the full details of what that conversation was like.
Yeah, and I mean, as the coach of a new team, I mean, sometimes you give that message and there might be leftover guys that are like, man, hey, you know, I didn't come here for this, like, to just be absolutely dressed down on game one. So obviously it's apparent that he's earned the respect of the guys, and that's all you can ask moving forward during the season. You know, you got to get buy-in from every single person on the team, not just 3/4 of the team, not 80%. You need buy-in from 100%. And, yeah, no, I thought the Jack Plummer response was hilarious, and we'll get to him. We'll get to Jack, but, you know, I was very glad to see, you know, kind of his poise come through in the second half.
This was, I mean, forget just like season openers or whatever. This was one of the weirdest games
I've
ever watched.
Weird.
So I went back and watched it on Sunday just to make sure that I hadn't been seeing things on Friday. Because Friday, you know, you're caught in the emotion, which I don't know, before we get into the weirdness of it, I don't know, I know you and I texted a little bit during the game, But Mary was like shocked at how aggressive I was watching games. She was like, "I think it's been a long time since I've seen you like this." Like you know, like the fumble. I mean, hell, the first interception, the long run by Jawar. Like I'm going nuts. Like I'm screaming. I'm fist pumping. I'm trying not to wake up the kids. And she was like, "I think I forgot how intense you used to get because you just haven't been like that recently with Satterfield." Like I was.
Yeah.
I don't think it really set in how much this meant to me and how desperate I was for this thing to get off to a good start until the actual game started. I was losing it a little bit.
I think our fan base had been waiting for that game for 6 years.
Yeah.
And, like, we had already – I mean, like I said, it's football. Anything can happen. And I'm not saying our fan base, like, marked a W down automatically, but – I think everyone's picture they had in their head was us walking off the field with a win. And, you know, when that second quarter happened, you start to tense up a little bit. The play in the end zone, because I think we had gotten jobbed by the refs, you know, a little bit. And then there was a throw to the end zone. I want to believe it was to Chris Bell where they had his arm hooked. And for like a second, you couldn't – he was yep. throwing his arm up for yep. a flag and you couldn't see the flag come in. And I didn't think they were going to throw it. It was the hardest hat toss I've had during a U of L game in 5 years, and it felt phenomenal. But
that was my first major freak out because it happened right after they had that play where, like, the dude dragged down
yeah, oh yeah,
and
Maurice Turner, back and,
like
yeah.
10 yards out of bounds, right in yes. front of the official, and they didn't throw a flag. And then I think that play was either the next or second to the next play. I squealed. Like, I made a noise that I can't even duplicate. Like, I was so furious because I didn't think they were going to throw that flag. It was almost time for Daddy Takes a Drive. Like, Daddy leaves the house without saying anything and goes for a drive, and we're not sure if he's going to come back. It was almost the first, I need to leave this thing for a little bit moment of the season, but thank God that flag was thrown. But yeah, I was very, very, it was like the old Mike was definitely back on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, that's when you know we're all invested here. You know, there'd be times during the, you know, the Scott era where, you know, they break off like a 40-yard run instead of me just, you know, I'm like, oh, here we go, you know. But the emotions were 100% there on Friday, and it had been a while, so it felt great.
But rewatching the game on Sunday, it was shocking to me. Like, I can't remember a Louisville game or really any other game where for 75%, three quarters, one side just absolutely dominates, and then the other quarter, it's not like the other side, they slightly won. Like, they thoroughly kicked our ass in the second quarter. Like, in the first half, the first quarter, I should say, you know, defensively, like, we're doing whatever we want. Like, we're getting a huge push. Our defensive line is bum-rushing them. Like, we're making tackles. We're wrapping up. Like, they're getting nothing offensively. And on offense, like, we're controlling the trenches, too. Like, the second quarter happens, and I don't get why it occurred, but, like, they're getting a huge push on both sides of the ball, and defensively and offensively. Like, the line is moving in their direction when they've got the ball. Like, they're doing whatever they want to us, and we just sort of forget how to tackle. And it's not like Georgia Tech switched up their offense a whole lot. Like, they were basically running quick hitters to the outside, a lot of runs off tackle. And it was – I mean, we just lost our minds for a little bit. And I've never seen a game flip like that where – it's just thoroughly dominated by one side for three quarters and the other for that one quarter. It was one yeah. of the weirdest games I can remember watching.
They kind of went hurry up a little bit, and there was a couple times where we weren't really, I don't think, lined up correctly, or we got lined up
yeah.
late. And then when I went back and watched the condensed version, you know, I'm not picking on guys here, but we had some rough angles in the secondary by a couple guys.
You can say it. Josh Miggins. Yeah, Josh Miggins had a couple bad angles.
Yeah,
he played well. Yeah. When he played well, he was really good, but he had a couple plays where he had bad angles for sure.
I totally agree there. And God, the Ben Perry loss was just so dumb, and it was huge. Like,
yeah.
I truly feel if he was in the game, things probably would have gone a little bit differently. But yeah, I mean, I just think we are shell-shocked and fell back on our heels a little bit. Because God, it looked like, you know, after the first possession or two, I was like, holy, I like turned to my friend. I'm like, we're about to blow these motherfuckers out right here.
Yeah.
And, I just cannot believe what was happening, but, yeah, it's, it's one of those deals, like I said, hey, you want to learn that stuff in a win, but I don't expect our deep, like, my dad texts me, he's like, God, the defense, like, you know, even after we won, he's like, I'm a little worried about the defense. I'm not that worried about the defense because I like you said, I thought they were good for like almost most of the game. It was just for whatever reason on those couple drives, I just don't know what happened. But yeah, moving forward, we'll see. But I still feel pretty good about them.
I thought that when Georgia Tech started the game by giving the ball to an M. Rutherford, it felt very personal. It felt very targeted. I was not happy about it. And then he drops a pass on like their third play. I'm like, all right, fuck this. You know, this is not what Rutherford's do. The second quarter, he kind of lit our ass up. So we've got a Rutherford dominating. We've got, you know, the standard, of course, a Louisville running back transfer somewhere and then has to score at least two touchdowns against us. Trey Cooley's getting loose. I'm like, this is fucking hell. It was just like, that was a very, very low point. I was very concerned about the future.
Were you surprised that, and if I heard this wrong, then it's my fault, but were you surprised that we deferred and kicked off?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but I liked it. I know that Jeff is a offense guy for sure, but deferring and taking the ball in the second half is just smart.
I completely agree. I guess I never watched enough of Purdue games. I just figured that he coming out of the Petrino tree would be like, we're taking the ball first. But to me, I was like, hey, maybe he likes his defense. And after the first possession, I was like, holy shit, he could be right here. But yeah,
it just makes sense to know, you know, you have more of an idea of what you need to do when you get the ball to start the second half. It's just like, that's, you know, you can play it out. So, you know, you can hopefully have a good possession at the end of the second half and then get the ball right back, which is kind of the exact opposite of what we did. I mean, if you're going to criticize, I mean, I think we have to criticize Jeff Brohm for that last drive of the first half, because he did one of my least favorite things when teams have the ball with deep in their own territory and less than a minute to go. If you're going to try to get points, like, really try to get points. Call timeouts after plays where the clock is running. Really go for it. And if you're not going to, just pack it up and go into the half. We did the thing where it's like, I mean, there was 15 seconds running. All we had to do was not run a play, and the half was over. We run a play where it's 3rd and 7. We're on our own, like, 17. The best thing that you can do is probably like a 20-yard gain, and the clock still runs out. What are you really getting out of that? And then the worst thing is you throw an interception, which is what Jack Plummer did, and you give them a chance to put up points right before the end of the half. That was, I would assume that Jeff would like to have that one back, because I was flipping out about that a little bit. But let's go back. Let's talk about the Ben Perry thing, because I do think that it changed the defense. Although Antonio Watts ended up playing a good game. I thought he was a little bit lost at first, but he ended up, I thought, playing pretty well. The Ben Perry, I mean, I guess by the letter of the law, that's an ejection. But what are you supposed to do when a quarterback starts his slide that late? I mean, he's already in the act of tackling. King starts the slide to a point where, like, he kind of, there's nowhere to hit him besides in his head. You can't just change your body in midair. So I really wish that they would do, I get why you have the rule in place. I get that you're trying to avoid headhunting and you're trying to make the game safer. I wish that they would go to a place where it's kind of like the flagrant fouls in NBA and college, where there's a degree to it.
Yeah.
If it's a clear headhunting deal, like defenseless player, second safety comes across the middle and just launches at him and goes helmet to helmet, I'm fine with an ejection there. If it's a play like Perry's, why can't we have like a 2 infraction and you're out rule? Why, you take the 15-yard penalty, but let him stay in the game. And if it happens again, then you eject him. I think it's so dumb.
Well, here's the story. If it takes 6 minutes in a review to decide whether he did it or not, he probably didn't do it. Like, it needs to be an absolute fact that you know in the first 30 seconds or first viewing of the replay. The fact that it was a 6-minute one, and they're like, ah, did he, didn't he? Like, a suspension from the game is just totally ridiculous, and it can change outcomes of games. But like you said, I would like to see, you know, some sort of change to that. It just does not feel right. I felt bad for the kid. You could tell that he was so amped up, ready to play. And, you know, obviously I'm excited to have him back. So we'll see what happens next game. But if it's going to take that long, you know, they shouldn't toss the kid from the game.
At least they don't make them, like, have the escort back to the locker room anymore, which I've always felt was the most over-the-top thing in sports. Like, are you going to handcuff him? Yeah. I always thought, you know, what do you think they're going to do? Like, Ben Perry's
like,
out of the...
Yeah, they're, like, throwing tomatoes at him as he walks through there.
It's like Ben Perry's out of the... He's got a fucking knife! He's going after King! Like, he's not going to do anything. So I thought it was cool that Perry was... He was still very engaged on the sidelines. You saw him going nuts.
That was great. That was awesome.
You saw him going nuts after the late fumble. It was very, very cool. That was interesting. The penalty was bad. I feel like I had one last thing I was going to say on that point, but I haven't. I've lost it now. So I tell you what, we're going to talk about Jack Plummer. Before we do, I want to remind you guys about our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Home Field Apparel giving you the best collegiate sports apparel all season long. If you want to get geared up for the season, still plenty of time, still lots of U of L gear out there. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Check out their wide range of over 150 schools. When you check out, make sure you use our promo code CHRONICLE15. It's going to save you 15% off your first purchase for Home Field. They've got new U of L gear coming soon. Keep an eye out for that. Follow them on all their social channels at Home Field Apparel, Apparel without an E on Twitter, at Home Field Apparel, spelled normally on Instagram. That's going to keep you up to date with all the latest releases. And again, make sure you are checking out our friends over at Home Field Apparel, visiting them constantly at homefieldapparel.com, and using that promo code CHRONICLE15 when you check out. All right, Dan, are you ready to talk a little Jack Plummer?
Yeah, let's talk about our boy JP.
It was, I mean, we're stating the obvious, it was not good in the first half. There's no way around that. I think we all were panicking a little bit, like, is this the guy? Is this going to be a thing that keeps us from having a decent season? I feel like I was a little bit less panicky than a lot of people. I mean, I got probably 35 text messages at halftime from people who were like, it's time for Clarkson, get him in there. And I'm like, yeah, first of all, I don't think Clarkson's the next man up. Second of all, I think that you got to stick with the vet for a little bit longer. I mean, where was your freakout level when it came to Plummer based on his play early on?
Look, I had first game, you know, Twitter or whatever you call it. I had first game X jitters, just like, you know, Jack looked like he had some first game jitters as well, because I was not in a good place. It would be one thing if, like, hey, you know, some of the throws are contested throws, or, you know, the defender is knocking it away. I mean, you know, I'm just calling a spade a spade. Some of the throws were not close, and they did not look pretty. So I did not feel really good about what I saw in the first half. I think he had trouble throwing over the middle a lot. And when I watched the condensed game in the second half, there was a lot more crossing routes. There was a lot more to the outside. And who knows? I mean, if Callaway catches that slant route at the beginning of the game, you know, maybe Jack's feeling good about himself and he's in rhythm and we have a totally different outcome. But it just seemed like he lost confidence. He was unsure. He was missing guys. I mean, geez, there was one play where, you know, I think it was in the third quarter where he had Thrash wide open at the first down sticks, and he decided to, you know, throw over the top on a third down and incomplete. So, you know, hey, credit to him for bouncing back in the second half. Am I nervous going forward? I wouldn't say I'm nervous, but I am going to need to see more. You know, especially when they talked about accuracy in the offseason, I like Brahms, like, you know, we're trying to get him to be more consistent, be more accurate. Part of me was wondering, I'm like, I wonder, like, how inaccurate, you know, he actually is. And some of that, you know, was definitely on display the first half. So I hopefully throughout the season, you know, he kind of gets in rhythm more and they find what he likes to do. But I don't know how you watch the first half and you kind of weren't like, ugh, this isn't great.
The concerning thing for me was that, you know, his biggest asset coming to this into this program, he put up decent numbers at Purdue, put up decent numbers at Cal last year, but it's not like he was regarded as this top five transfer portal quarterback. He wasn't, you know, up there with Sam Hartman or anything like that. But the biggest reason why you were getting excited about Plummer coming here was he has this familiarity with Jeff Brohm's offense. And I remember you know, dating back to when Petrino was here the first time, and you and I know some guys who were playing at U of L at that time, and they would always say, like, you don't have to be the best quarterback in the world to put up gigantic numbers in Bobby's offense. Obviously, you know, Brian Brohm sucks, and he put up, you know, solid numbers there. We love you, Brian. But they would always say, as long as you know the offense and you know where the ball's supposed to go and you get it there quickly and accurately, like, dudes are going to be open, they're going to have space to make plays, you're going to put up monster numbers. And that was what we were supposed to have with Jack Plummer, this familiarity with the offense. And it looked like early on in the game, he just wasn't seeing the field. He wasn't making quick decisions. He wasn't making the right decisions. And when he wasn't accurate. There were so many plays where, you know, he had guys underneath who were wide open. He had guys in the flat who were wide open. And he either didn't see them at all, or he saw them, but it was a second or two late. And, like, that to me was concerning. After the game, Brohm talked about how Plummer's a guy that just, he wants to win so desperately that he revs himself up for games, and sometimes early on, he's just a little too worked up. Like, that's going to have to change. Like, that should not be a deal that we're worrying about with a six-year quarterback and one who has knowledge of the offense. That does concern me moving forward when we play bigger games against better teams that have more intense defensive fronts. Because, look, it's not just that he was missing things. Like, he had a clean pocket almost all the night, the entire night. The offensive line was tremendous. It was just the third game since 1980 where we haven't allowed a tackle for a loss. Like, this was a game where you should have put up gigantic numbers. And credit to him, like you said, for getting things right in the second half and really stepping up and being a leader. But there's definitely a part of me that is like, is this guy going to lose us a game at some point this season? Because we check every other box offensively. We've got the running backs. My God, do we have monsters on the outside this year? He's got weapons everywhere.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, the whole feed the studs mantra is going to come back. And I will give credit to Jeff. I thought simplifying the offensive game plan in the second half, especially early on, was the right thing to do. Like, we got some quick hitters to the outside, to Kevin Coleman, to Jamari Thrash. We used Plummer in the run game, which I think threw Georgia Tech for a loop.
An RPO. I thought that was nice.
Yeah. I also think that early on, this is like a very niche thing. I don't know if you remember this at all, but do you remember in 06, the first game against Kentucky, you know, Brian was coming off of a really devastating injury, knee injury at the end of 05 that kept him out at the end of the season. Hunter Cantwell ended up starting the last few games. He almost got killed in the Gator Bowl. But, like, it was the first time that Brian had really dealt with a serious injury. And there was all this talk during the summer lead up about how he was, like, you know, kind of weird about contact. He was thinking about it a little too much. And so Bobby Petrino, the first play of that Kentucky game, the, you know, also known as the Michael Bush game, everyone thinks it was the Michael Bush run. In reality, we ran a reverse to Harry Douglas. And he let Brian get out and deliver a block. And it wasn't a great block, but it was him being in control of his first real in-game contact since suffering an injury. And, like, I think it let him get his feet underneath him. He had some contact. It didn't hurt him. He got over that hurdle mentally. And we did kind of a similar thing in the second half. We ran that reverse, and Jack Plummer throws that block. The announcers go crazy anytime a quarterback throws a block. It wasn't a great block. It was like 20 yards away from the play, but it was something. And I think maybe that settled him down a little bit, because from that point forward, he saw the abilities of his wide receivers. He saw that they were able to make plays, and it seemed like the game kind of slowed down. So I loved what they did with him getting off to like a simple start in the second half to get his feet really firmly planted. And then I think they let the playbook rip a little bit later in the second half. But I thought it was good all the way around.
That 06 recall there is just unbelievable. I would have never thought about that in a million years, but you're exactly right. I did notice that they ran that play, first thing in the third quarter. Here's kind of where I am with it. He doesn't have – I mean, there might be a couple games that he's going to have to go out and win us. But like you said, the guys we have on the outside between Coleman and Thrash and Callaway, we have some home run hitters in the backfield. He doesn't have to do a whole lot. Just get the ball out to the open guy. I mean, we had so much yards after the catch, it seemed like, especially in that second half, where our receivers just made plays. And like you said, credit to him, credit to simplifying the offense. But, you know, hey, just find the open guy, get it out quick, and, you know, our studs are going to make plays. So, yeah, it was nice to see. I did that. There was a moment in the first half I was like, and like you said, he's probably not the backup, but I was like, is my Pierce Clarkson going to get or my Pierce Clarkson prediction getting like a series or two going to happen in game one? But I'm glad it didn't. I'm glad that we stuck with Jack. And hopefully this Murray game, we can actually, you know, hopefully it's a game where we can work on stuff, work on some of the things that maybe didn't work in the Georgia Tech game and get his confidence going heading into week three.
There was one moment where I think we had a play where his helmet popped off and we had Evan Connolly come into the game, which I think I did like a triple take. I'm like, okay, what's happening here? At least that's who they announced it was. You know, he came in, it was a simple handoff. Maybe they feel more comfortable with him under center than anybody else. Because my understanding going into the game was that the depth chart, which has Orr's underneath Plummer, was kind of Plummer, then Brock Doman, then Harrison Bailey, the walk-on, was going to be kind of the third/maybe second guy, then Pierce Clarkson, then Evan Connolly. So to see Connolly get that one snap was interesting, but then Plummer came right back in. Let's talk more about the receivers, because it's one thing to hear about how good guys like Jamari Thrash and Kevin Coleman and, you know, Jimmy Callaway are. It's another to actually watch them play for Louisville for the first time. You mentioned the yards after catch. At one point in the second half, I think Plummer had 167 yards passing, and 132 of those yards were yards after catch. Like, these guys were just absolute animals out there, and they have the type of ability that we were so desperately lacking the last couple of years. You know, it was so frustrating to watch this offense because you felt like you never had a situation where it was like, just get the ball to this guy, and he's in a one-on-one matchup. He needs 7-8 yards. He needs 10 yards. He's going to get it. Like, we didn't have guys that would make people miss. And I thought Coleman, his definitive play was the touchdown. You throw just like a little swing pass out to him. He's one-on-one with a defender. It's mano-a-mano. All you got to do is beat him to get to the end zone, and he does. Like, he whips him to the corner, scores a 10-yard touchdown. Like, that was really eye-opening for me. And then Jamari Thrash, my God. Like, this kid, yeah. I haven't had a crush this big on a player after one game in a long, long time. That dude's an absolute fucking beast. Like, we need to get the ball in his hands as much as possible this entire season because he looks incredible. Chris Bell looked much improved. We know all about his potential. Mark Evans-Bruce is still there. After a little bit of a rough start and some bad plays, Callaway, you saw why they want to get the ball in his hands. Please don't false start on a 3rd-and-1, though, when you're a receiver.
Yeah, that one drove me crazy.
But these receivers, dude, you're going to hear Feed the Studs is going to be worked back into the local lexicon very quickly because we've got some absolute just guys out there.
100%. I don't want to leave out Amari Huggins-Bruce. I mean, he made some plays during the game as well. But, yeah, I mean, Thrash and Coleman, I mean, geez, Thrash just looks like a step above a lot of receivers that I watched throughout the weekend. I mean, I'm so glad that we kind of honed in on him on the second half. That route he ran for the touchdown was
– yeah.
Well, they set that up perfectly because, like, he'd kind of been running a lot of, like, almost little button routes outside or some crossing routes, and finally they got him to bite there, and that was a nice pass by Jack. But it's nice to know, like, hey, if one guy maybe they're focused on, that we do have some other guys. It just seems like someone like Chris Bell is only going to get better. He looks kind of like a monster out there. So I'm interested to see how the receiving corps does throughout the rest of the year. As far as, like, the running backs go, I was a little surprised. Isaac Grundo, I thought he was kind of a tone setter at the beginning of the second half. Same. That was like a second and eight run right to start the half. And he kind of broke some tackles there for a first down. And it was like, all right, let's fucking go. And he made some nice plays. But I was a little surprised that we went away from Jawar for as long as we did. And obviously, I think everyone was hyped on that run there to kind of, you know, ice the game almost. But I would like to get him a little bit more involved next game if we can, because I still think, you know, I don't know if it was pass blocking he wasn't doing. I just don't know why he wasn't seeing the field as much, or if they were trying to split carries. But that one had me a little perplexed.
No, I'm right there with you. I thought the exact same thing. It was so noticeable in the second half that for a while there, I was like, is Jawar hurt? Like, why are we not seeing him again? Because that the 76-yard touchdown was only his fifth carry of the game. He ended up with only seven runs. I think the carries were split pretty evenly. I think Jawar had seven. Garendo had five. I think Turner had six. And actually, our leading rusher in terms of carries was Plummer, who rushed the ball nine times. Some of that not by design. But I'm with you on Garendo, too. He comes in at the start of the second half, and I felt like he gave us a jolt sort of the same way that Jawar did in recent years, where he was the second, third, or fourth guy to come in the game. He was running so hard. And yeah. In all of his runs, he almost got met right at the line of scrimmage, and he took what could have been a no-yard gain and turned it into like a 3, 4, 5, 6 yard gain. That was, and they mentioned that he's the best pass blocker on this team. Maybe that is why he was in there to start the second half. But he definitely, he definitely sparked us a little bit. Turner played well when he was in there. He had some nice runs, and then Jaws got loose. But I do feel like in our bigger games later in the season, we're going to need more pass run balance, and we're probably going to need to rely on Jawar more because he's a monster too. Like we need him a lot. But it was nice, like you said, to see him get loose there at the end. I'm sure he was probably frustrated with the lack of playing time or the lack of touches, and to see him get loose was a nice deal there. Real quick, some positive quick hitters. Ashton Gelade, I thought was a monster.
Oh, he's going to be an absolute tank. I mean,
they could not.
It was awesome.
They couldn't block him all night, so they held him on pretty much every play. Somehow didn't get flagged for it at all.
Right, Jesus.
I mean, he was the disruptor on the very first day, on the first interception, which was nice to see Ramon Puryear come down with that, the former walk-on from Eastern High School. But Gelade, I think he's going to be every bit as good as we want him to be. TJ Quinn at linebacker, I thought, played really well. We heard a lot about him during the spring and the fall camp. And he comes in, he almost gets tossed for a targeting play right at the beginning of the game, which also, like, we didn't mention this when we were talking about the Ben Perry stuff. Football has the longest offseason. It feels like we're waiting forever. We're counting down the months, then we're counting down the weeks, then we're counting down the days and the hours. And it's like, it's finally here. Let's go. And we got to watch 5 minutes of real action before we got to watch 15 minutes of reviews. I could feel like like Mary just losing all interest, and like kids across the city instantly losing all interest and going back to video games. It's so fucking ridiculous. Like that was absurd. I don't even know why they were reviewing Quinn's first hit, but I thought he played a really good game. The secondary didn't make quite as much of an impact as I was hoping, but I thought Quincy Riley made some really good plays. He got called for the holding on the last drive, or what was almost the last drive for Georgia Tech, which I thought was kind of an iffy call. But it was good to see Storm Duckett out there make some plays. He broke up the 2-point conversion at the end of the game. I thought that was nice. One other guy, Stephen Heron from Trinity / Stanford, I thought really played well. There had been some injury rumors. He didn't look injured at all, so that was nice. But a lot of guys really stepped up defensively to play a good game. They stayed away from Jarvis Brownlee a lot. They were kind of throwing to the other side a ton. But when Jarvis was tested, he played well. The secondary overall was pretty good, but not quite as impactful as I was hoping.
Yeah, I think the MJ Griffin loss is...
Yeah,
that sucks. And I'm not picking on Minkins or Neil or anyone like that, but there was some rough angles out there for a couple of those drives. So hopefully we shore those up.
The last person we have to give a shout out to, Brock Travelstead.
God,
4 for 4. He's the ACC specialist of the week. He also handled punting duties. Did well there. I think he averaged over 46 yards per punt on 4 punts. He handled our kickoff duties. Did a good job there. We were all worried about losing James Turner, who, by the way, missed a field goal and an extra point in his Michigan debut. But our run of success with Brock's at Louisville appears like it's going to continue. That was nice to see the special teams really shored up, basically by one guy.
I'm not going to lie. I meant last podcast to talk about how concerned I was with how quiet we had heard one thing about the special teams. And I was like, I'm a little worried. Like, it's like one of those things that you just, like, you almost forget about until game one, and it's like, oh, God, like, because when you have bad special teams, and it wasn't just the kicking game and the punting game, which were great by Brock. I thought our kickoff coverage was phenomenal. Like, we were flying down there. So, that was great to see, and hopefully we can keep that up the rest of the year.
Yeah, we knocked the shit out of the returner on the first two kickoffs, and then they went really quickly to, like, fair catching every kick. I was like, that's that. Well done. I've got three, outside of Plummer's play in the first half, I've got three areas of minor concern after this game that I want to address kind of rapid-fire style. One, the offensive line was incredible, but we only played those five guys. They played the entire game. We know that guys are going to get dinged up in the trenches. It happens every year. Best case scenario is like one or two of your offensive linemen miss one or two games. Worst case is you have a couple of guys that get hurt and are out for the year. So the fact that we didn't have any substitutes play, I think, is a little bit concerning. We're going to have to build depth there. I know Jeff said that he was hoping they would have more guys play, but they just, you know, they didn't find a spot where they could run some more guys out there. But the five guys who did play, I mean, I thought that Eric Miller and Willie Tyler at the tackles were incredible. Miller on the Jordan play, if you go back and watch it, he basically blocks like three guys. He destroys his man and another man, and then gets to the second level and sends the guys that he's blocking into a third man. Like, it was an awesome, awesome play. Second concern, tight ends. Brom loves utilizing the tight end. We knew it was a concern going in. We did not have a single tight end who had a catch. The guy, I mean, Nate Kariski probably should have had a touchdown. He was wide open, and Plummer missed him. I think he was worried about the referee that was kind of in the way. But Kariski and Josh Lifson, played the most out of tight ends. And I don't know how much stock you put in the Pro Football Focus grading after games, but they graded our tight ends as our two worst players on either side of the ball. They had the worst grades. I think Kariski had the worst, and Lifson had the second worst. So that's a little bit of a concern moving forward. We'll see if we get more Jamari Johnson or Joey Gatewood, the more that they learn the position, Johnson being just a freshman and Gatewood being a guy who played quarterback or receiver before this year. And then third concern, what was it? Now I've forgotten what it was.
Yeah, well, back to the Pro Football Focus thing. They could make up a number and I'd believe it.
I'm saying,
okay, like, I have no idea what they're basing this off of. But yeah, it was, like I said, I didn't have like sound during the game because it was kind of a social deal. And like after the game, I was like thinking, I'm like, God, who even played at tight? I didn't even know who played at tight end. I don't know. Cause I was kind of looking forward to seeing if Gatewood got some playing time. And I don't know if he even got in or what, but maybe it's a thing, like you said, where Brom wants, you know, him and Jamari to be comfortable with the offense before he starts running them out there. But, yeah, I mean, geez, the O-line thing, that doesn't worry me as much. Like, hey, if you got your guys, you got your guys. Like, I'm guessing Murray State will be able to, you know, throw some other guys in there and some other combinations. So that'll be nice. But I was, just like you, I was thrilled with how the O-line played, both from a running and a pass protection standpoint. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I don't come out of this game, like, having huge concerns because it was such a weird game where it felt like we dominated 75%. And for whatever reason, that second quarter, I don't really know what happened because, I mean, we saw it the first, third, and fourth quarter. So, you know, it's in there. So, you know, I'm taking that moving forward versus the negative, and we can hopefully build off that.
Yeah, my only other, the third one that I was trying to think of was the untimely penalties. Penalties were kind of an issue for Brom teams at Purdue. I thought that we did get hosed a little bit by the refs, but there were some penalties also that came at bad times, and there were a couple that were
Easily avoidable during the Riley holding. Like I just thought that was a bad, because didn't Ashton, that was like a big time sack.
And yeah, he sacked him with one hand after he was being held the entire time.
Yeah, that seemed like a really big play at the time, and I was like, Jesus, I don't think that's holding. But yeah, especially, I don't know, there was a couple that there was so Georgia Tech had so many hands to the face that weren't called. I was like, there's one. I was just like pointing them out. But it is what it is. Hey, we got the W, and hopefully we get a friendlier whistle next time.
Yeah, Riley set up. I thought the three biggest plays of the game. The biggest play of the game was the Destel forced fumble, because after the Riley penalty, you know, they're moving, they're driving, they're, you know, we're only up by one. They're clearly in field goal range, and like I mean, concerned about a Jack Plummer 2-minute drill at that point. Like I'm still a little bit concerned. Like I'm not sure if they had scored there, if we would have wound up winning the game. So for Destel to, you know, jar the ball loose, and I think Watts recovered the fumble. I can't remember.
No, who it was Cameron Wilson.
Cameron Wilson, you're right. Thank you. And he played well too. Like that was the biggest play of the game to me. I thought the second biggest play of the game was actually when we went for it on fourth down early in the second half, and, you know, we still, it still looked like things were getting away from us, and still looked like Plummer was maybe pressing just a little bit. He makes a simple throw, I think, to Thrash and picks up a fourth and four. Like, that was a, I thought that was a moment where it was like, okay, after that, he really settled down, and we needed to get points on that drive desperately to stay in the game. I feel like if we didn't convert that, then maybe the game goes completely differently in the second half. And then the third biggest play is obviously is the Jordan run to basically put it away. But those three plays stood out to me as, I mean, there were other important ones for sure, but I thought those three were gigantic. Did you catch the fake Scott Satterfield at one point?
Oh my God.
On our sidelines in the visor?
I did. Like, I was like, Jesus, I've had too many high noons here. But no, it was a dead ringer for Scott. We just can't escape him. So speaking of Scott, 66 points. What the hell?
We're not talking about it. We don't need to talk about it.
I was like, all right, Scott, asshole.
No, but that guy who is a support staff member, because I know he quote tweeted my tweet on Twitter with him, where I'm like, I did a double take, and he was like, definitely not Sat. And people were giving him shit about wearing the visor, and he's like, whatever, it's 1-0. So I think his name's Ryan, I want to say. I wish I knew that I still could give him a proper shout-out. But, like, it's when the game was 29-28. Like, I was like, am I fucking seeing things? I paused it and rewinded it, and it looked like Scott Satterfield was coaching the team. I'm like, I'm so conditioned to seeing that look that I didn't think twice for a second.
Well,
but
here's what needs to happen. Louisville needs to take the visors out of the team store. We actually had our buddy Webb texted us. He bought a visor during the good times of the Sat era, and it was like, hey, am I still allowed to wear this? I mean, I was like, absolutely not. So I think it would just be good for everyone if we eliminated the visor and just kind of move on from that era.
Hey, if it works, it works. I'm okay with it.
That
guy's 1-0. I'm fine with it.
Nice looking visor, yeah.
But I definitely was like, what the fuck is happening right now? The fake Satterfield. Do you have any closing thoughts here? Any parting thoughts on what we saw Friday night?
I'm just, after the game, it was one of the better feelings I've had. Like, it wasn't even relief. I was like, God, that's so, it's like, we've been talking, like, I mean, geez, we went through the same thing last year with Syracuse. We're like, just win the game, Scott. And, you know, he didn't, and he couldn't even really get the fan base back after that, even though we went on a run. Like, even in the, you know, during our nice little end of the year streak, like, you know, the crowds were a little meh, and it just seemed like he never really gained the fan base back. I'm not saying Jeff was going to be the same way. I mean, it's his first game, but I'm like, God, you know, don't start out with bad vibes here. We need, you know, good vibes, especially with the schedule that we have coming up, where they're, you know, although Indiana looks like they may be a little bit, you know, tougher than we may have first thought. But it just seems like there's some winnable games there. So to come out with a win, that's just huge.
Yeah, seeing Louisville as the number one trending topic on Twitter that night for something positive was so refreshing. It was so cool to be like, you know, it was one of those nights where you're going back and you're watching highlights and you're texting your buddies and you're winning the first couple of games. It lets you dream crazy things. It lets you, all your biggest goals are still attainable. And like you said, seeing some of the teams, especially in the first half of our schedule, not play well on opening weekend has you thinking some crazy thoughts, and you know, potentially being like 4-0 and then maybe 5-0 going into the Notre Dame game, all that good stuff. So it was, look, at the end of the day, we needed something really good to happen. And if we had seen like all this offseason enthusiasm about the Brohm hire, all the student the season ticket sales that were sky high, all the, you know, we're going to go back to being where we expect this program to be, if it had been stopped in its tracks by another week one upset loss, it would have been pretty difficult to absorb that blow. And, you know, thankfully we don't have to worry about that. Thankfully something good happened. It feels good to be talking about positivity on the first podcast of the season.
The best part about being a college football fan is the ability to dream.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a win, hey, you can still have those thoughts in your head. You can still dream about what potentially the season could be. With a loss, you know, not only can you not do that, then you had a full slate of college football on Saturday that would have been a tough pill to swallow. So, you know, just be able to relax and watch those games and watch the ACC, you know, perform well. I think I'm pretty excited about the rest of the year here.
All right, before we talk very briefly about Murray State, do you have a Dan of the Dumps for this week?
This isn't a home run. I'm kind of running dry. This actually, I was texting you about this yesterday. This is a really quick one, but just so stupid. But I was like, I'm going to save this for the pod. I'm in a rental car here driving through North Carolina. I have a lot coming up. Like, you know, we have this golf trip this weekend. I'm pretty busy at work. My wife's birthday and my son's birthday is next week. You know, just trying to, I'm coming in town for the Notre Dame game. A lot going through my head, trying to coordinate, a lot on my mind, basically. And I went into a gas station, grabbed my favorite snack. I'm a big combos guy. Like, that's my combos and water. Like, that's my go-to at a gas station. But I don't know. I was just, like, daydreaming. I'm driving a Ford Edge as a rental car. Shout out Ford Edge. I know that's a Rutherford staple.
Yeah.
But, so I just grabbed the combos and go back to my car, and it was unlocked, and I like get in, and there's like a point, like 2 seconds where I like kind of glance at the floor, and it's like super dirty, and I like lean back in my chair, and I was like, what the fuck? And then like it like hit me like 2 seconds in, I was like, oh my God, I got in the wrong car. and I literally looked to my left and like opened the door, and the lady was like coming out, like getting ready. And she like saw me, and I was like, "I'm sorry." She was like, "Oh Lord!" And I was like, "I was like, oh my God!" I mean, my car was like literally parked like right next to it, so I felt pretty stupid. But the worst part is that's not even the first time that happened. Like a couple of years ago, me and my brother went golfing, and after we got done with our round, he's like, "Hey." He was the one driving. It was his car. It was a newer car. It was like a black SUV. And he's like, hey, just toss your clubs back here. You want to just have a beer here in the parking lot? We like sat in the back of the trunk for like 10 minutes, just like shooting the shit, having a beer. And then like we finished, and he's like, all right. And then we like head up to like go get in the front seat. And he's like, oh shit, this isn't my car. We had put our clubs in the wrong trunk, and it sat in the back of a stranger's car for 10 minutes, just shooting the shit. So yeah, apple doesn't fall far from the tree there. So that's the D in the D this week.
If you don't lock your car, Dan Snard may enter.
True. Yeah.
That's what happens. We got Murray State Thursday night. It's the Jeff Brohm home debut. It's a blackout game. Murray State, of course, an FCS opponent. They beat Presbyterian 41-10 in week one. They did go 2-9 last season, so this is not, you know, this should not be a big-time challenge. I think the goal here is be up by 4 or 5 scores at halftime, maybe play the starters one series in the second half, and then let some other guys get out there and get some experience, get everybody healthy, gain some confidence, and then get ready for Indiana 9 days later. I think people are more focused on the attendance than anything else. They want to see this be a great crowd. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think there's a shot that it is the best crowd that we've had since COVID, which is what Josh Hurd said is his goal. I don't think it's going to be like a 60,000 crowd. I mean, it's a weeknight game against Murray State. There's only so much you can do with that. Hopefully, as many people as possible will show up, and hopefully we'll take care of business. Do you have any significant thoughts here, Dan, and what's your final prediction?
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if we just kind of jumped on them early and put them away, and that way we're able to kind of, you know, give whoever we need playing time or work on the things that we need to work on. I'm not really stressed about this game. It is on a short week. I guess if there was one concern, that would probably be the only thing. Just keep everybody healthy. I predict us to win big, maybe like I'll say 49-7, and let's get it together for week three against Indiana.
Yeah, I said 49-9. I think we give up 3 field goals, no touchdowns. I think the defense is going to play well. I want to see more polish from Jack Plummer, more early, you know, just just focus, no jitters, no happy feet, no nothing like that. I want to see who the next quarterback is, how they play. I want to see Harrison Bailey. I've heard so much about him, I feel like, since the fall camp. I want to see how he plays. I really want to see Pierce Clarkson get out there and maybe get a series or two and see how he plays. Have you watched the BS High special on HBO about the Bishop Sycamore stuff?
I haven't. Everyone says it's awesome.
It's really good, and we have one of the running backs from the special, Mario Asian, who's featured in the film. He's a walk-on running back from the Bronx. I'd love to see him get some touches. That'd be a cool storyline. He played a decent amount in the spring game, so that would be fun. But I'm saying Louisville wins this game 49-9. Parting thoughts, Dan, before we get out of here.
Glad to get the victory. Really happy that Jack bounced back in the second half. I don't have too many worries. That was just a weird second quarter where we kind of got back on our heels. I think the schedule's right there in front of us. So let's take care of business Thursday night, and we'll go from there.
Just now seeing a text that my daughter has had a rough day at school. It was her birthday yesterday.
Oh gosh, I meant to say happy birthday. All right, so give me what was on the gift list. What was the highlight? What was her theme? I need everything.
All princess everything. Okay. She got into Barbies like 24 hours before her birthday, which was a tough blow for us. But thankfully, Mary's mom was able to get some Barbie presents at the last second. We had a princess party at the ballet school. That was great. Yesterday was September 5th is her actual birthday. Turned four. I can't believe it's been 4 years. It feels like it was fucking yesterday. But yeah, we had a great birthday. But I guess maybe the post-birthday was too much for her, and she has been frustrated at school today, which is a theme, so I'm going to have to pick her up. But we're not frustrated with U of L football. Beating Georgia Tech. Always subscribe to the podcast wherever you find podcasts. It's the CC Podcast, or if you just type in Louisville Podcast, you'll be able to find it that way. And then leave us a nice review. Give us a nice rating. We'll read the reviews. I forgot to look again, but I promise I'll look before next week's podcast, and we'll read any new reviews we've got. Until we talk to you guys next time, let's go Cards. Let's beat Murray State. Let's get it done.
Let's go Cards.